One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Oh, hey there, Med Talkers. Welcome to the fourth episode of our bonus series, Throwback Thursday, the history of modern day medicine, where every Thursday we retrace our forefathers' footsteps and learn how we've established our modern day practices in medicine. Grab your popcorn, guys. This one's going to be a good one. And yes, I know I say that every time, but honestly, this one is the one. So today is for all of you budding anaesthetists. If you want to impress in your anaesthetics interview, guys, then I suggest you listen in carefully and then learn all about how we started putting people to sleep in order to perform operations. Isn't it just mind-blowing that we can open up a human, remove an entire organ or a bullet or fix a broken bone and then repair the damage we caused without them feeling a thing? This wouldn't be possible without anaesthesia. Now, general anaesthesia was discovered halfway through the 19th century, and prior to this, surgery was only performed as a last resort. Without any sort of pain relief and being fully awake, one can only imagine what this would have been like all those years ago. And it wasn't just the patients who suffered. Picture yourself as a surgeon working in the early 19th century, walking to theatre, fully aware of the immense amount of pain that you're about to put your patient through. The early year anaesthetic agents included alcohol, which was known to have sedative effects, and opium. Other substances trialled in ancient India and China included cannabis, and other methods to induce a loss of consciousness included multiple blows to a patient's head, or bilateral compression of the carotid arteries. I know, sounds awful, doesn't it? And also very dangerous. Squeezing nerves in the upper part of the limb was found to induce pain relief in the arm or leg, and also using cold water or ice. And in the early 19th century, hypnotism was also trialled for pain relief. Now, a key time to mention straight away is the 1840s. It's funny, there's a running joke in all medical and dental schools amongst doctors and dentists about who really deserves the doctor title. But us doctors have dentists to thank for developing anaesthesia. In December 1844, Horace Wells, an American dentist, attended a party with his wife and noticed the effects of inhaling nitrous oxide, also known as laughing gas. A shop clerk did not react when he hit his legs against a wooden bench whilst he was jumping around. He was later unable to remember the events, but noticed the bruises and the cuts all over his knees. Wells then realised the analgesic effects of nitrous oxide and started using nitrous oxide himself. He got a colleague to extract a tooth after he'd inhaled nitrous oxide and did not feel any pain. In January of 1845, Wells then gave a demonstration to medical students at Massachusetts General Hospital. However, the patient he was demonstrating on cried out in pain because the nitrous oxide gas was not administered correctly, and so this was a failed demonstration, although the patient didn't remember being in pain. The reason for this failure is that nitrous oxide isn't a very strong anaesthetic. Wells was then humiliated, and eventually, because of this, he committed suicide. A year later, in 1846, Dr. William Morton administered ether, no, not the cryptocurrency, instead a colourless liquid with a very sweet odour and also very flammable, via inhalation to one of his patients and performed a painless tooth extraction. Morton was an American dentist and physician. He then performed a public demonstration in Boston using ether anaesthesia, where he administered it to a patient undergoing a tumour removal, who showed no sign of distress whilst his surgeon, Dr. John Warren, removed the tumour. Now, ether's potential anaesthetic effects were previously known, even way back to 1540, where its effects on animals were described. However, this was the first time ether was being used on humans. Dr. Morton's operating room, known as the Ether Dome, is preserved intact at the Massachusetts General Hospital. This was a remarkable event, and news of this spread like wildfire around the world. Morton actually tried to hide the identity of the anaesthetic agent used for this procedure, and he called it lithium, but it was later discovered to be ether. Shortly after Morton's demonstration, he applied for a patent, which was issued for lithium, and this received a huge backlash due to being unjust and illiberal. Ether was then used for the first time outside of the USA in London, where another dentist called James Robinson performed a tooth extraction at the home of an American doctor, Francis Boot. Communication back then was via ships, and so it wasn't until December that this took place. The first public demonstration took place in Britain in December 1946 at University College Hospital, where London's leading surgeon, Dr. Liston, performed an amputation under ether. Now, whilst ether was being used and proven to have its anesthetic effects, the actual mechanism and pharmacology of the drug was unknown. And when deaths occurred following administration, it received many objections to its use. Other agents were soon discovered, notably chloroform, which was noted to have anesthetic qualities on animals in 1842, and Scottish obstetrician James Simpson was the first to use it on humans in 1847. Chloroform was then used by Dr. John Snow, a London physician on Queen Victoria, in 1853 for the delivery of Prince Leopold. Chloroform then replaced ether as the main anaesthetic agent at the beginning of the 20th century, although this then reversed when chloroform's hepatic and cardiac toxicity was realised. So, how did they actually put people to sleep? Well, they used a drop mask. This is a mask which was placed over a patient's mouth, containing fabric, and the volatile anaesthetic liquid was dropped onto the mask whilst the patient was breathing. So, that's how general anaesthesia came about. Now, what about local? In the 19th century, there was a lot of interest amongst chemists in Europe regarding the effects of coca leaves that had been discovered in Latin America. And it was not until 1860 that Albert Nierman isolated cocaine from coca leaves. It has been reported that he noticed that when he placed the crystals on his tongue, it made his tongue feel numb. So, cocaine was the first local anaesthetic to be discovered, and it's the only naturally occurring one. All of the other ones are synthetically derived. It was introduced into Europe in the 1800s following its isolation from coca beans, and Sigmund Freud, the Austrian psychoanalyst, used cocaine on his patients and became addicted to it through self-experimentation. In the latter half of the 1800s, interest in cocaine became widespread, and many of its pharmacological actions and side effects were elucidated during this time. In the 1880s, cocaine was introduced into the field of ophthalmology and then into dentistry. Now, the undesirable properties of cocaine meant that scientists were working extremely hard to find safer alternatives, and since then, many more effective local anaesthetics have been developed, such as lidocaine, and will continue to be developed. Now, in terms of anaesthesia, a major problem was found, and this was especially with surgery to the thorax and the abdomen. So access to these areas of the body required relaxation of the muscles of the body wall and the diaphragm, and this required high concentrations of general anaesthetics. The problem with these high concentrations is that they can cause marked depression of circulation and also respiration, which leads to delayed recovery and has significant morbidity associated. The solution to this was actually an observation that was made years before, which was that the South American arrow poison, curare, produces muscle relaxation, strictly neuromuscular blockade. And so in 1942, an anaesthetist at the homeopathic hospital in Montreal called Harold Griffith realized, along with his resident Enid Johnston, administered curare to a young man who was undergoing an appendectomy. And the credit for introducing curare to anaesthetics belongs to Griffith and Johnson. And so as the years went by, more and more of these neuromuscular blocking agents were developed, such as succomethonium, pancuronium, rocuronium, and atricurium. And soon, anaesthesia became redefined as a triad of narcosis, analgesia, and muscle relaxation, with specific drugs being used to produce each of these effects. And from then on, things just progressed and progressed. Intraspinal injections were studied by August Speer in 1899, and the 1920s saw the development of the epidural anaesthesia. In the 1930s, securing a patient's airway whilst under anaesthesia was performed via tracheal intubation using the laryngoscope. And this is actually what sparked the development of the neuromuscular blocking agents, such as the ones we've previously mentioned. Soon, inhaled chloroform became out of fashion, and the non-flammable and safer medications were discovered, including isoflurane, enflurane, and halothane. Intravenous anaesthesia was then developed, namely propofol, and in the 1960s, opioids were introduced to enable intraoperative pain control and blood pressure control during these procedures. And whilst complications still can, of course, occur, anaesthesia today is extremely safe and expertly performed. Wow, what a story. Thanks goes to the dentist for getting the anesthesia train moving. And where would we be without it? Imagine having any invasive procedure done without some form of anesthesia. If you think someone taking a couple of tiny bottles of blood is painful, just imagine what it was like in those days where they took out our organs. Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode and found it informative. As always, we'd really appreciate your feedback, and you can do this by dropping a comment on the Apple Podcast platform. Please share these with your friends and your family, subscribe to our channel, follow us on social media platforms like Instagram and Facebook for plenty more updates, and keep listening to our episodes, which will be released every week on Thursday at 8. Thanks for listening, guys, and have a great day. Goodbye.